Car counters are just thinking. We're just using our brains. We're using the same information everybody else has at the table. And can you imagine any game in the world where thinking too much or in a particular way would be considered cheating? Can you imagine if you were playing chess and they said, hold on, we think you're thinking four moves ahead and we only allow three moves ahead? It would be ludicrous. So all car counters do is think in a particular way.
If I had to guess what the cardinal rule for card counters was, don't draw attention to yourself would be way up there. While card counting isn't illegal, casinos aren't too keen on having players use probability to actually win at blackjack. Flying under the radar just seems like common sense. What I wouldn't expect is for a successful card counter to share his experiences on YouTube in a wildly successful series of videos. Well, that's just what Stephen Bridges has done. Since 2018, Stephen has been recording his experiences as he went from card counting novice to professional counter. On this episode of Scammapalooza, I talk to Stephen about how he balances card counting undetected while racking up millions of views on YouTube. If you enjoy this episode, why not leave a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts? Or, better yet, just tell your friends about it. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson, and this is Scammapalooza. So I spent several hours watching your video today and watched you millions of views, tens of thousands of dollars passing hands and casinos all across the country, across the world, I should say. The question then I have to ask you is, can I see some ID?
Oh, you cannot see my ID.
Well, I feel like legally you have to show me your ID. Because a lot of your video is people asking you to identify yourself, is to prove who you are.
I've even had it where people down, you know, I've just been walking down the street and the occasional person will just go to me, hey, let me see some ID. It's just a bit of a joke, which I absolutely love. Because this, yeah, just one guy just does it, walks past, doesn't stop to say hi, nothing. He just wanted to do that joke and continue. And I just thought that was so funny. But yeah, that is a point of like a recurring sort of theme. And really it's coming from a place of the vast majority of the time, it's casinos breaking the law or at least trying to use some kind of loopholes to get my ID. Because really to gamble in the US, you don't need to show ID for the most part. You know, like it's quite a complex thing in a way, but the sort of broad strokes are, provided you're clearly over the age of 21 and there's sort of no question about that, then you're allowed to gamble and you don't have to show over ID unless you're buying in or cashing out for really large amounts of money. Then you get into the sort of taxes and things like that where they would need your ID, but in general you don't need to show ID. So what will happen is a lot of time when a casino catches a card counter, they will try and get the ID of the card counter so that they can, you know, store their name, they can share it with other casinos and things like that. So yeah, quite a central point of conflict in a lot of the videos is when they demand my ID and I decline.
Because it does seem as if, aside from the skill of card counting, which we'll get to, a lot of what you covered in the series was bureaucracy. It was about the law, it was about the rules of casinos, it was about who different people working in and with a casino are and what rights they do and don't have. And you always seem to know what your rights were.
Yeah, I do. I don't think I really realized how much of a factor that would be when I started. I just kind of thought it was going to be a case of count cards, get backed off, maybe they'll ask for the ID, decline, carry on. And I always sort of was told that as long as you decline that ID request pretty firmly, they'll let it go.
Yeah.
But I've definitely had situations where they haven't let it go and they'll just keep pushing it until the point where they'll call the police and they'll claim I'm trespassing because I won't leave, but I won't leave because they won't cash me out and all these kind of things that happen. But yeah, so I mean, I read a book called The Law for Gamblers and I try and brush myself up on the law, you know, speak to other card counters and try and know what I'm talking about to an extent. But yeah, it's always pretty complicated because often the people you're talking to, they don't know the law themselves, and which is absolutely wild to me because these are casino employees and they're making this request, they're making this demand, which they can't legally force, yet they just think it's totally right because it's a policy they have. And they just don't have this understanding about the difference between a policy and a law. Of course, a policy is just like an arbitrary rule that's been made up, but you can't just sort of randomly create policies that override legal procedures.
You mentioned sort of being surprised. You weren't expecting that when you started out. What were you expecting when you started out? Watching this series, it doesn't feel like becoming a card counter was really a bigger goal. Like, I mean, you talk about challenging yourself and, you know, more cynically, I guess, making YouTube content.
It sort of was a bit of a bucket list item. You know, like I came across card counting probably when I saw the movie 21. I saw a bit of a blur when I actually heard about the idea of it. And it's just kind of one of those things that at the time I remember thinking about and going, oh, I'd love to be able to do that. That just sounds so badass. I wish I could do that. But also having this perception that you had to be incredibly intelligent to do it, and that I thought that it wasn't really a thing these days because of surveillance and, you know, automatic continuous shuffling machines and things like that. I thought, ah, oh, it's not really a thing anymore. But I would love to be able to do that. And then I think later on, I stumbled across Colin Jones's videos, who runs a membership program to teach card counters. And I kind of realized, oh, this thing is still a thing. And I don't necessarily need to be a genius. It's just like a bit of hard work. And then someone with average intelligence could get the hang of it. I was like, okay. But then the more I learned about it, the more I realized you actually need a lot of money to make money counting cards. It's one of these weird things where people always sort of joke to me, oh, if I give you 100 quid, can you go in the casino and, you know, bring out 300 or 500? But really, you need thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to bring in big money, because you're playing a game that has such a tiny, you have such a tiny advantage over the house. You can hit massive losing streaks. And if you're not financially prepared for those, you can just wipe out your bankroll. So I kind of realized, right, I need money to do this, and I don't have the money. I don't even have the money for the training. Like, I just didn't have much money at the time. I was sort of a low-tier YouTuber, kind of sometimes full-time YouTube just, and then sometimes not. And then I also thought at the same time, kind of immersing myself in the world a bit and watching documentaries, I thought, I can't find anything, any documentary, where it's from the perspective of like a beginner. It's always like some badass card counting team that knows what they're doing and they're really cool. So there's never just been a bloke just doing it. And I also really like YouTube. Like, I genuinely am like passionate as YouTube about YouTube as a medium. And this was at the time where Casey Neistat was like at the top of his sort of game, who, for people that don't know, is probably one of the most revolutionary vloggers of all time. He's a filmmaker that ended up doing daily vlogs. And these are like cinematic quality and just incredibly good storytelling and editing. But there's something a bit more rough around the edges about YouTube than a documentary. And I just kind of thought there'd be this really nice opportunity for some content that would explore A, what it's like for a beginner, B, in a bit more of a real rough around the edges, nitty gritty kind of aspect that would work well for YouTube. And I thought I could also leverage that into making it happen. Like, if I was going to make a YouTube series, I could contact this Colin guy and see if he would like hook me up with a collab of some kind that could maybe help me learn or maybe put up the money for me to play. So I basically, it wasn't that it was just about content, and it wasn't that it was just about counting. It was that I happened to find two things that I thought could help facilitate each other that I also was individually quite excited about.
When you sort of reach out to people who are card counters, how do you convince them, hey, can I record you? And I'll promise I'll blow your face. How can I, you know, can I bring a camera into your fairly secretive, very expensive course and just record it so that I can use it on YouTube?
Yeah, well, I sent essentially a cold email to Colin Jones and asked him if we could sort of work together. And the idea of me being like an affiliate for his program, and then he could sort of potentially like hook me up with, you know, free training or things like that. And he was, I think I just got lucky, if I'm honest. I think maybe I just emailed him at the right time where he was like, sure, what's the worst that can happen? And sort of just was being open to these kind of things. Like, I don't know if I sent this offer today, whether it would have, you know, you just don't know, do you? Mm. But I kind of got lucky that he was sort of receptive to it. And then, yeah, one of the things in that was to attend a boot camp that he does. So he has this online course, this membership, but he also does these boot camps a few times a year in Vegas. And obviously that is like going to be that's going to be good content. Going to a blackjack boot camp where I get to like meet all these card counters and train. But yeah, I just told him that I would let him review the footage. I'd blur everyone's faces, but still being there and arriving and having a camera and everyone sort of being briefed at the beginning that this guy's here, he's going to film, but he's going to blur everyone's faces and we're going to check it over. You still feel really weird about having a camera in that environment. And even now, when I do sort of team trips with my blackjack team, and I'll occasionally film my team, I have to blur the faces. I have to pitch shift the voices. At one time, one of my teammates is incredibly private. He's very, I don't want to say paranoid, because I think it's a completely reasonable concern to have, but he's very cautious about anything about him being online, as is the case with most sensible card counters, not me. So, you know, I sent him the video edit that I spent so long on this edit, and he just didn't want to be in it. He was like, can you cut me out entirely? I was like, it's kind of a bit late for that. We're sort of, you know, we filmed this a while ago and I got you okay at the time, but what can we do? In the end, I decided to blur his entire body, which I also like changed the color on the pixelation blur to like, just like, so that even identifiable clothing was not an issue. I re-recorded all of his lines in a bad American accent that I then pitch shifted and put over the top. So by the end of it, there was barely any of him. Like, his essence wasn't really in the video at all. All that to say, you know, frame by frame, I check even any views of documents or even hotel badges. I know they don't have names on, but I just double check anyway. Like, all these things that are in the shot in the videos that have identifying info for card counters, I check. And for the most part, I have a very similar policy for the actual casino staff, because I don't want to dox anyone. You know, with having a YouTube audience, you're always going to have some people that are going to take things too far. So I don't want people to go after employees at a casino in any way. So I try and respect the privacy of everybody involved except myself.
So obviously anyone could learn the basics of card counting online. What else would I get for my $3,000 if I was to attend a boot camp?
I think one of the most important things, if at all possible, for a new card counter when they think that they're casino ready is to get their game tested by another card counter. This is like so important. You know, it's kind of, you know, awkward to say it because it's such a barrier. Like, what a faff, what a hassle. You got to now find another card counter after doing all this training and they've got to agree to test you. And that, you know, but in my opinion, it's such a key part of the process, because a lot of card counters will learn to beat software. You know, they'll play like a simulation of blackjack, and then they'll get that absolutely perfect. And those same people, you take them and you stick them in a casino and they just won't play properly. They will just, like, the environment changes. So there is something very different about when you're in a casino to when you're playing at home in your own comfort. So I think one of the things that, say, Collins Bootcamp offers, or any sort of test out, is that you have an actual card counter or multiple card counters there to assess your game, much like a driving test, and tell you at the end, you are a profitable player and you can play in a casino. Even then, it's still good to get your game checked in a casino if possible, but it gives you that level of assurance. And in a game where you will lose so much money at times, it's really important that you're confident that your game is good. Like, you don't want to be in there second guessing whether or not you're playing correctly, because it's hard enough to deal with mentally as it is. So, you know, getting tested. But in general, some of the stuff that Colin teaches in the bootcamp and the guests that he have were things that I wasn't even allowed to record. He was just like, you have to put the camera away for this, because there's some extra stuff there that he just wouldn't want online. So the quality of the info, I would say, is potentially even higher at the bootcamp. But really, and this is seems like a weird thing to throw out, because it's not one of those things that people would think is a huge thing when it comes to card counting, but it's massive. The networking element is huge. So much of playing in casinos is getting information from other card counters about the casino conditions and where's worth playing, and it saves you so much time. So even just that first bootcamp, meeting other card counters and who I've been introduced to through that sort of network is totally invaluable. Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily something I'd recommend a beginner just goes to. I think you should probably be at a level where your game is almost casino ready, but I thought it was invaluable.
How do you explain the basics of card counting and basic strategy to lay people? You know, when you're at Christmas dinner and you've got your grandmother wants to know, what's with this card counting thing you've been doing? Are you cheating? And you have to, it's like, well, no. Do you have a 30-second explanation that you can bust out to explain card counting to lay people?
First I'll give you the it's not cheating explanation, because it's one of those things that, I don't know, it doesn't bother me, but I think it really is not cheating. So that kind of characterization. So the thing I say, card counters are just thinking, right? We're just using our brains. We're using the same information everybody else has at the table. And can you imagine any game in the world where thinking too much or in a particular way would be considered cheating. Can you imagine if you were playing chess and they said, hold on, we think you're thinking four moves ahead and we only allow three moves ahead? It would be ludicrous. So all card counters do is think in a particular way. So that's my kind of elevator pitch about why it's not cheating. And I've never had someone name a game that not passed that test. So in terms of an elevator pitch as to what card counting is, in essence, a card counter is keeping track of the cards that have been played in a blackjack game so that they have information about what cards are remaining. And there are certain times where if there's a lot of high cards left in the shoe, then the card counter can gain an advantage. They're more likely to win. So in those moments, we'd bet big. And the moments where there's not many high cards, we'd bet small. And in essence, that's how we get an edge. And that's kind of the elevator pitch, because technically what I said there isn't quite correct, but it's the closest thing I can get that summarizes it without going off on a million tangents.
Is it still the basic idea of counts, that when high cards come out, you know, you count up, and if low cards come out, you count down, and just basically have a number in your head that is going up and down depending on which cards come out?
In essence, it's working on off a count system. There are different count systems where you assign different point scores to different cards. And most card counters will use high-low because it's the simpler system. But with simplicity, you know, you can count for longer in theory before being tired out. You can multitask when doing it. You can maybe talk whilst doing it. So it has some advantages. Yeah. Yeah, in essence, what you're doing is you're keeping a count going. And when that count hits a certain point, you gain a slight advantage over the house. But we also have to factor in, you know, the actual counting bit is what we call the running count. You then have to factor in how many decks are remaining in the shoe and divide that running count by the amount of decks left. And normally you would divide by sort of 0.5 deck intervals. So that will give you what we call the true count. And that's the number that really matters. Because, you know, if you have a running 10, if there's 10 extra picture cards in the shoe, then, well, that means something very different if there's one deck left to if there's eight decks left. It's a hugely different situation and a different advantage. So, yeah, we do that. And the other thing that you've touched on is that we just basically learn to play basic strategy, which is just memorizing the charts where you've had computers play millions and millions of blackjack hands and through machine learning figured out the optimum way of playing. We memorize that way of playing. And then we also memorize all of the variations of play based off what the count is. So that system can change based off a high count or a low count, which gives you a slightly extra advantage as well. But in general, card counting, as far as I'm aware, has remained relatively consistent for the past while.
So it's less about how many high cards are in the shoe, but like what's more important is what percentage of the cards in the shoe are high cards.
Yeah, so the way that I describe it is that imagine that you're going to go fishing and you have two ponds, right? And I say in one pond there's 10 fish and in the other pond there's 20 fish. Which pond would you rather fish in, provided that your goal is to catch the fish? Well, you'd probably go with the pond with 20 fish in. But then what if I said, actually, the pond with 20 fish is about the size of the ocean, and the pond with 10 fish is just like a puddle? Well, then you'd probably go for the smaller pond because you're more likely to catch a fish. So when I'm talking about this stuff, about running count, true count, all of this stuff, amount of decks remaining, I'm talking about the amount of fish versus how big the pond is. And we want a lot of fish, well, in a smallish pond.
Once you've got all of this information in your head, and you've been given the thumbs up by card counters who say you're casino ready, what was it like the first time you stepped into a casino to actually try with real money and to actually, you know, win or lose or caught or not be caught? What was that feeling like? Did you feel at that moment like you were a real card counter, really coming in here, really ready to make money? Or were you still someone who was just kind of making a video in which you do these things? Or did you go in feeling like, no, I'm the real deal?
Oh, you know, I really went in with it to be a card counter. Mm. Like I wasn't just sort of, there's two ways of looking at it. You know, oh, I'm going to try this card counting so I get a video. I wasn't interested in that per se. I wanted to really be a card counter and also film it. So I was really like all in. I wasn't just doing it as a little dabble. Like I was like, I'm going to do this. But at the time, I mean, I did a test out before going in the casino, and then I did an in-casino test out. And both of those, I really felt like I only scraped a pass. So I wasn't filled with confidence at the time. And also, I was secretly recording, and I was worried about being caught for that. And I wasn't, the whole thing was terrifying. First time in the US, really, yeah. Properly. So the whole thing was kind of terrifying. And obviously, some of these casinos are absolutely huge compared to casinos in the UK. Massive. So the whole thing was very daunting. And I remember being very nervous when I went in and my heart rate going. And it kind of felt like I was about to rob a bank. It's like, okay, I'm going to go in here and commit a crime, even though it's not illegal or immoral. That's kind of how it feels, because everybody there doesn't realize what you're there to do, and you're going to go and try and take their money.
I guess what I'm imagining with that experience is a little bit like, are you familiar with Maria Konnikova? She was an American writer, a psychologist, and she wrote a book about called The Confidence Artist, which is about con artists and the psychology of scams. And then she decided to write a book on the psychology of poker and what you can learn from the psychology of poker. And so she went in to learn poker in the same way as you went to learn card counting, but with the sort of larger goal of writing a book. And then turned out she was very good at poker and eventually won, hundreds of thousands of dollars from poker, because it just turned out that actually she was very, very good at it. I think what I was getting was not so much that you weren't a real card counter so much as that it was there a moment when you went, oh, this is it, I'm really doing it, I'm really making money?
Yeah, don't worry, I didn't think that you were accusing me of not being a proper card counter. Right. That's not how I took it.
Yeah.
And interestingly, I think with the example you gave, she probably ended up being a better poker player because she was writing a book and she had to be thinking about these things. And I think poker is a game, and all gambling really, but poker in particular is a game where it's so easy to self-deceive, and people think that they're playing with an edge, or they think they know what they're doing. It's the easiest game to lie to yourself. And that can happen with gambling. So the fact that she was writing a book about it and having to sort of talk through all this stuff, I think maybe helped facilitate her getting so good. Maybe some natural talent thrown there as well. But yeah, I think it's interesting how that probably helped. So for me, I think the moment where I felt like, oh, I'm a real card counter, is when I first got backed off from a casino. Because to me, casinos could back off a player that they just think is counting that's not even counting. You know, so it's not necessarily an actual badge of honor. But I definitely remember at the time, the first time I got pulled to one side and told, hey, we've decided you're an advantage player. We're going to be backing you off from blackjack and blackjack style games. You're welcome to play anything else. That moment for me really solidified that I was a threat to the casino, if not in a small way. And that I think that's probably when it felt real. And there was another moment where just counting the cash in my car after a winning session and just being like, wow, this is like the physical result of this thing. It's like, this is money. This is like months worth of rent for me. This is ludicrous. I think also kind of gave me that feeling of that validation, whether or not those things are actually, you know, proper benchmarks. Like, you can go and win whilst playing a losing game, or you can get kicked out because they think you're a card counter. But at the time, those felt like real milestones for me.
I think if you are card counting and a casino catches you doing it, I think that's a really great marker of that's a great moment. They're the experts.
Well,
they've got an entire team of people whose job it is to identify you.
The funny thing is we've done two team hits where we're all in the same casino playing as a team. And on two occasions when we've done this, they've backed us all off, and they've also backed off a random player thinking that they were on our team. So it's really funny that every now and again, the casino will just ban a player that's just playing the game and doesn't know what's happening.
Wasn't there was one video where you got backed off. They caught you, but they were acting very strange and very, you know, and they told you that you'd already been banned. And after a lot of back and forth, you realized that they had mistaken you for a different card counter, so that you were that random person. That must have been an odd situation to be in.
Yeah, that was a really funny moment, because I walked into this casino and I'd really never been there before. I'd got as far as the door, and they'd asked for my ID, and I just said, oh, I don't have it, and I'd left, because at the time I didn't even want to show ID at the door. So I went back to this casino and I went in and started playing, and I didn't even get a high count. at this point, and someone just comes over to me, hey, can we have a word? And already I'm like, what? Because I know this is a back off, but I don't know why. I'm so confused as to why this could be happening. Pulled me to one side and they just said, hi, are you aware that you've been backed off from playing Double Action Blackjack before? And I just was like, I've never been here in my life. And I think I was obviously telling the truth. And I think it caught the guy off guard. And I think he could just sense the honesty in me.
Yeah.
And he was really taken aback. And they asked for my ID and I gave it over in this case. And then they looked at my picture and looked at a picture they had on a bit of paper. And they ended up being like, well, this doesn't look like the same guy. And they ended up apologizing to me, asking if they could get me a meal and sending me back to the table.
Yeah.
It was just such a funny moment. And I've had another moment very similar where I was walking around a casino and the police officer, well, basically a security guy, and the police officer came up to me and kicked me out. And we had this whole big argument outside. And it was because they thought I was somebody else that was like counting. I was just, there genuinely was a card counter at the time going around Washington State that looked enough like me that I was getting mistaken for him, but I think he's been mistaken for me as well. And there's definitely been card counters that have been mistaken for me. I hear about it every now and again, which I find really funny. Sometimes I get sent I have like a few surveillance people that will just send me like insider info. And I got a report a while back where they were just like, you've been spotted in this place. And they sent me a picture of just some random bloke. Just like, so not me.
My favorite moment was when someone said to you, I think it was something along the lines of, look, to be honest though, you are the poster boy for card counting. Being a white, you know, a white dude.
White guy in your 20s.
White dude in your 20s. Yeah. You got the beard, you got the hoodie. You know, it's like, yeah, card counting vibes. Fair enough. It's interesting what you're talking about, because that story about being mistaken for a card counter purely by chance, most of that video you didn't actually have footage, and so we got to watch you tell the story without the footage. And it struck me watching it that would actually be having to make this content, having to tell this story to an audience, having to review the footage for the purposes of making YouTube videos would be a great learning exercise for you, something that other card counters probably wouldn't have to do. Like you have to explain exactly what happened, why it happened, what mistakes you made, in a way in which perhaps other card counters wouldn't.
Yeah, and also being able to get feedback from friends and other people about how I've acted. You know, it's one thing in the moment thinking, well, I think I handled that well, or I think I didn't handle it well. You send the video and then people go, no, you handled that good or bad, or, you know, I have obviously with YouTube comments, I get opinions from lots of people that I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's obviously hard to take those with too much authority because you don't know who's speaking to you. But I do hear obviously a lot of opinions about how I handle myself. So it definitely does refine my approach. And in general, what I try and do, keyword being try, because I don't always succeed, is I try and remain calm and never raise my voice and just sort of politely have that battle. Because I think as soon as I get angry, it escalates the situation in a place where nobody wins anyway. But that doesn't always happen. But that's what I try and do. But the thing I actually find really difficult in videos, and this is something I didn't realize would be a problem, is that sometimes it's a lot more factors to a situation than I can explain on camera for a few reasons. Maybe it's because there's things that other people have told me that I can't say on camera, or maybe it's because I'm trying to also tell a story. Yeah. And if I then spend 15 minutes spent going, well, this is exactly why I thought this and this, because this person said this, and I heard from this person that this casino staff member was blah and etc. And I had this insider info, but if I go into all that detail, it'll be too much. It won't be interesting. There's stuff you have to cut out just to kind of keep everything a coherent narrative. So there'll often be times that I'll get some kind of a comment that is criticizing what I do. And some of the criticism is totally valid. I'm like, oh yeah, bang on. But then other times I'll either reply or I won't reply, giving this unbelievably long amount of context that informed why I acted the way I did. But yeah, in short, being able to watch back how I've been in the casino definitely helps me, I think, realize where my weaknesses are.
You made the decision, and a good decision, to not release the videos until you had enough, you know, you had enough content, that you had enough of a story, that you had sort of succeeded or failed as a card counter. And I think the first video is where you say that it's been 1,336 days or something like that. Yeah. That's how long you'd, you know, between when you'd started the project and when you'd released the first video. Was it difficult to just sort of keep producing these videos and keep this sort of learning card counting and doing all of this work, knowing that eventually you are going to put yourself out of business by releasing these videos and then not knowing if the videos are going to be successful? Was that sort of a sort of Damocles hanging over your head the whole time, knowing that eventually I'm going to have to start releasing these videos and the party is over?
Yeah, I definitely had card counters telling me, don't release them, just keep going and things like that. But really, it was sort of impossible to know how it was going to go. So the way I looked at it was, they're either going to go relatively under the radar, in which case I won't be known anyway, and it probably won't make a huge difference. Like, my face is still in databases. Mm. Like, casinos still know who I am. So if I release videos and they don't get many views, then maybe it'll make a small impact. Maybe it won't make any impact. Or they're going to do, you know, to take the two extremes, really well, blow up, and then I'm going to be way too well known to go in casinos. And I kind of thought that was probably not the worst scenario either. Like, yeah, it might make card counting hard, but it's probably, you know, oh no, I've got too successful at the project I did. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's hardly, like, you know, bad. It would definitely affect the card counting. The other thing too was, it was very hard to know whether or not even making videos and them being watched by a lot of people would affect being in casinos. And I think it's really easy with hindsight for myself or anybody to go, well, obviously, if you put out videos of your face, casinos are going to know who you are. It's obviously going to massively impact you. But I didn't know, and I didn't think people realized that surveillance people in particular would take a liking to my videos. And also, the world is really big. Like, even videos getting millions of views, well, the casino industry is massive. So how many people really are going to actually know? How many people are going to care? So I do think it was kind of hard to judge, despite it maybe seeming obvious in hindsight that people are going to know who you are. It was hard to judge whether or not it would be crippling to my card counting career or just a bit of a pain. In reality, it's sort of somewhere in the middle. When I first went and did a trip after releasing all the videos, I found that so many casinos I'd go to, there'd be at least one member of staff that would know who I am. And, you know, if they said something, I'd get backed off. But then I also got in a decent amount of table time in general. Since that trip, I've done other trips where I haven't published videos on them, where I've worn pretty elaborate disguises. And I found that completely changed everything. And then the way I kind of judge it is, I sort of compare myself to my other teammates and I see how much time I get compared to them. And as long as I'm not the least, then I'm still sort of an asset on the team. And so far, it's still doable, but every trip, you never know.
There's always a chance, but that's true of all card counters, right? They never know when the axe is going to fall and when they're going to get busted.
Yeah, and I think there are sort of, it's a tricky one, but card counters tend to be very optimistic about the longevity of card counting, and I think that it's just going to get harder and harder. I think these are factors outside of our control as a community. So really, yeah, I don't know. I guess I just approached the whole thing without too many expectations. I just was like, I want to do this because I want to do it. And I also want to make the videos. And I know those things will affect each other. And what happens will happen. I'm happy with the decision given this dice roll. Tricky one, but...
Fair enough. You mentioned that things will change in the industry, you know, that perhaps there will come a time when card counting is just impossible or impossible, you know, no longer worth it, we'll sort of say. I'm surprised we haven't reached that moment already, because we have automatic shuffling machines and they're not expensive. And I don't understand why we don't have, why every casino doesn't just have them there as the standard. Get rid of the shoe and just at the end of every hand, all the cards are shuffled. And so every you know, every hand starts fresh. Why don't all casinos just have automatic shuffling machines? Like, why are there still shoes?
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing, because the first thing that, you know, when I saw the movie 21, I was like, oh, well, we have these machines in the UK. They'll be everywhere because they kill card counting. So why wouldn't they have them everywhere? But the fact is that a lot of players just don't like them, and they just don't trust them, and they just don't want to play them. And blackjack players tend to be quite superstitious, and they think that you can catch a wave in the shoe. And if the cards are being shuffled constantly, then they don't think that wave exists. So they just don't like playing. The game just doesn't feel the same to them. Saying that, this is particular for American players. They really tend to not like the machines.
They're not wrong, though. I mean, there is a wave. Like, there is a point when it's good to gamble and good it's not. It's just card counters are the people who know where the wave is, and they're kind of having more of a stab in the dark. And do you know what? Actually, gamblers, proper gamblers who are there, not sure how it's going to end up for them at the end of the night, who don't have that predictability that you do, they're after a buzz. And that buzz only comes from intermittent reward, from that uncertainty. And if you've got an automatic shuffling machine, that you're not going to get the highs and lows. You're not going to get the runs and the things that you would normally get.
I don't think so, because, well, with a normal gambler that isn't counting, they are just playing the game. And you can have what we would just call variance, right? So like good runs or bad runs of luck. There's been times where I've played and the count's been negative and I've won like almost every hand in the shoe. And there's been times where the count's been incredibly positive and I keep losing. So the same thing with a regular gambler. They'll just have times where they're just winning often, even if they're playing awfully, and they'll have times where they're losing more than they statistically should. So the other factor is that, you know, gamblers will often think that it's a team game. It's all a team sort of sport. When I talk about the rhythm of a shoe, it'll often be in a way that if somebody takes a card when they, quote unquote, shouldn't take a card, then players will get angry because they'll think that that card coming out of the shoe will have affected the rhythm and all the cards that were coming out and we had a good rhythm going. But of course, they don't know the order of the cards in the shoe, and taking that card could have just as much been a positive thing for the next few players as it could be a negative thing. But players will really feel like you're sort of getting a good wave going. And if you're playing blackjack and you're not counting, this is almost like an automatic process in your brain. Like, it's just a weird thing where people, even on roulette, I think people could be like, oh yeah, we're feeling the table out. You know, it's just these kind of weird gambler fallacies that come into all of us if we're not playing with an advantage, because it's so easy to get superstitious about things. But really, it's a pretty random game for non-card counters, and whether it's being dealt from a shoe or being dealt from a machine that's continuously shuffling, I don't think makes a significant difference, I don't know if it makes any difference, but if it did, it's going to be microscopic.
But it makes I guess it makes a difference to their perception.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah, sorry.
They feel like if the shoe has got a story to tell and it's got a wave and it's got these ups and downs, and whereas if it's shuffling, they just feel like it's the cards are always the same.
Totally agree. Yeah.
So I was surprised that you were really open with how much money you made. There's a video we can watch where you go through exactly how much money you made as best as you could figure it out, as well as your expenses and how much time you spent on everything. And in the end, it felt like not like winning the lottery and more like running a small business. And it really sucked a lot of the fun out of the series, I'm going to be honest with you. It was really like, it was really loving. And then I watched that and I went, oh, this is that's right. Card counting's a job.
It's a grind.
This is a grind. This is,
yeah.
If it is a grind and it is a job and it, you know, why do people do it? Like, why do people choose card counting as a job or as a way to make money?
Firstly, like the results that I had in the first month of playing, you have expected value and you have actual value. And you, with enough hours played, you're going to get what you deserve as a card counter. So I could have a shoe where I win $30,000 or something incredibly high, but that doesn't mean that I earned $30,000. It just meant that I got a good variance in that shoe, and maybe in the next shoe I'll lose 20K or something. So the actual kind of short-term results or even medium-term results are not necessarily indicative of what the card counter is earning, because that sort of number or that hourly rate will come from the long term. But yeah, card counting is a grind. And I really wanted to make sure I showed that, even though it's kind of less sexy, to be like, oh yeah, this is kind of the reality. Because I don't want people getting into this if they, you know, if people watch my videos and they go, oh, maybe I'll give this a go. I don't want them getting into this with like false expectations. Like it, you have to do a heck of a lot of driving, a heck of a lot of playing. You win only just over half the time. You can lose for hundreds of hours and have incredibly painful downswings. It's lonely. You get kicked out of places. The whole thing is quite, in a way, it's quite a miserable lifestyle. But I've also had times where it's been an absolute blast and I've been playing on a team and we've won like large amounts of money and we've had some really big upswings and just had a blast. But to answer your question, I think that some people just want to work for themselves. They like that independence. Maybe a lot of card counters have a bit of a rebel streak and there's just something kind of fun about what you're doing, you know, the way of making money and the satisfaction from that. So I think it's maybe less that it's enjoyable and more that it's satisfying, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I got a sense from the video that, particularly the early videos, that there was a certain desire for justice in a lot of what you were doing, that the casino industry is quite unethical in its practices and it does take advantage of people and it does ruin a lot of lives. And card counters are really turning the tables on the casinos and they're sort of giving them a taste of their own medicine. Because you are really doing what the casinos do, which is creating a game where the odds are in your favor and then obscuring that fact from the other player. That's what the casinos do and that's what you do. Yeah. So was that part of it, a bit of sort of vigilante action?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's definitely a bit of a stick it to the man kind of feeling. And my feelings on casinos are pretty complicated. In general, I really don't like them. But then I also kind of am aware that casinos are made up of people. And there's a lot of people that I'm sure I would like or, you know, do like that work in casino industries. And they're not necessarily a representation of the industry. It's like there's almost like a difference between the corporation and the people in the corporation. Mm. Although obviously the corporation is just built up of the people in there. So it's kind of this weird paradox where, you know, I've met quite a lot of casino staff, obviously, when I'm either playing or just outside of that, that I, you know, like. And I'm like, these are nice people. And like these are like, from all I can see, like good moral people that care about their customers. But then I know that the casino industry will churn out people and grind them up and spit them out and bankrupt them without even blinking. They won't care. They won't, the industry itself couldn't care less. They will, well, you've got some money, sit down and play. It's the last dollars you have. Well, let's see if you're lucky. And they'll just absolutely squeeze people until they have nothing, which I hate. So it's this kind of tough thing because part of me often wants to go and sort of, you know, scream at casinos and how much I hate them. But then also part of me is like, well, yeah, but there's a lot of these people that are just, they're just working a job, you know? So it's a really hard balance and I'm not quite sure where I land on it fully. I actually recently did a talk at the World Gaming Protection Conference, which is kind of like the last place I thought I'd find myself ending up at, which is in Vegas. I just got back. And that talk, you know, that conference is normally for, you know, casino staff to learn how to catch card counters and cheaters and advantage players and things and just generally give better security. So when I originally was asked, I didn't really want to do it, but I ended up doing a talk purely on the back offs and how casinos back off card counters, because I believe that casinos are way too harsh with it. And if they were more chilled out when they back off a card counter, it would be beneficial for them and the card counter. So I was like, I'm only going to talk about this. I got a bunch of questions from the audience about catching card counters, which I just declined to answer and just kept it very much in that lane. But when I did that conference, I met a heck of a lot of casino staff afterwards. And once again, was just struck by the feeling of these are just people. Like if I was at some random networking event for anything else, if I just went to a networking event in the IT industry, be the same kind of people, just regular people. Yet the industry as a whole is awful. So it's just a weird.
Well, that's often the case. I mean, like, you know, when you call customer service because the phone company or the internet company has been treating you poorly and you just want to yell at the poor person in the call center who's, you know, and so often that the people who the face of the industry and not actually the people who are responsible for the terrible things, even if they are participating, right?
For sure, yeah. And like the surveillance people are treated generally pretty badly by the casino industry. They're not paid a huge amount. They're doing a really hard job. And they tend to be really nice. A lot of the dealers I've met are really nice. I guess maybe you're hitting the nail on the head there. Maybe it's just kind of my frustration should be aimed purely at the higher ups, because the people that are making those top decisions must be aware of the damage that they're causing sometimes. I think I have lots of feelings. I could rant about the casino industry, but I should probably hold back a fraction.
Yes, you know, I'm in a similar boat. We have one casino here in Melbourne. We have Crown Casino, one major casino, I should say, and it is a place that just sucks in not just money but culture. You know, so many things go through the casino, and so many things, a blind eye is turned to so many awful things that happen within the casino. And yet, you know, I'm a professional magician. People, you know, I get asked to perform there a lot, and I get asked, and every time I go in, I feel very dirty and I don't want to be there, but the money is always good. So I definitely.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I did a sponsor for an online casino way before I was a card counter. And I just think, wow, I would have turned that down so hard now. Yeah. But, you know, it's tough because just trying to make a living, isn't it? But,
yes.
Yeah. Well, it's a weird world.
Speaking of making a living, and I think I know the answer, what has been more profitable for you, card counting or the YouTube videos that you made about card counting?
I'd say the YouTube videos, although luckily I'm in a position where each kind of facilitate the other, right? So if I go on a blackjack trip and I lose money, I still might make money on the YouTube videos. So yeah, in general, I think the YouTube videos have made me more money. That's not to say that card counting hasn't been profitable.
Mm.
It's just that I think having a large audience and being lucky enough to have an audience of this size and what comes with that, it has, that's produced more money.
I mean, you say luck, and I think, I don't know, I feel like since we're talking about gambling and probability, like you have at least a decade of content creation on your channel before you started this series. So I know luck's right word. Like you've definitely built up an audience and created some very compelling videos telling this story.
Thanks. Yeah, I guess it's luck in terms of what if Colin had said no? What if my friend hadn't bankrolled me with 200 grand when I started?
Mm.
What if somebody else had done this idea before me? What if card counting didn't exist or someone hadn't invented it? What if it hadn't? What if I was too late to the game and didn't exist anymore? So, you know, there were a lot of things. What if I didn't get backed off in the way that I did, which allowed me to get certain video titles that I got, which allowed the videos to do well. So, don't get me wrong. I think I've made a good video series. And I think because I've made it, it is good. I think other people could have made a good video series too, but my background has created it in the form that it's created it. And I'm not sort of being super like modest to a point of like ridiculousness. Like I'm proud of what I've made, but I just also try and recognize that I've been able to make what I've made based off a lot of circumstantial stuff. Like if I hadn't been a street performer beforehand and been able to grind out street shows and earn a load of money to take the time off to then go and count cards for a month, which may have won or lost money, I wouldn't be able to do it. If somebody else was trying to do this and they have a regular job, they can take a month off their job to go and do it for a month. So I guess what I mean is that it's luck and it's skill, but there's definitely a luck element too.
Much like card counting itself.
Indeed.